Welcome to Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher from NY Events and you're listening in on DRN1. Bounce Back is a fun talkback show and today we have two Perth-based comedians, Joe White and Emo. Welcome, guys.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Thank you.
Lovely to have you guys. Can I ask you guys a bit about your background? I'm going to start with Joe because you've virtually just come out of quarantine from Melbourne, haven't you?
Yes. Novotel Hotel. That's where I was at. Four-star accommodation. I haven't stopped bragging about it, as you know, city view.
And, did you have like natural air ventilation? Because that's...
No.
Oh, that would kill me.
Nah. You know what? Every time I panicked, I just took a shower.
A good idea.
Yeah, because it was just that I felt fresh.
Yes. But Joe's, that fresh
Joe's on top
air
of the
feeling,
world with
it?
That wall-to-wall entertainment he's providing himself. Yeah.
I'm not even an only child. I'm one of six, but I love being alone. Oh, and yeah. this is recent, probably since the last... I'm 34 now, but yes, 5 years ago, I just started enjoying being alone and finding things to sort of always keep me busy and just put, like, I had a routine because I travel alone as well for work. Yeah. So I've already got a routine in place, you know, and so a lot of people who don't have routines in place and it's a new environment for them, then yeah, I can see where they'll go crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But what did you do to entertain yourself?
Man, I do this... A large part of my day was consumed by this Instagram live show that I do called Match Made in COVID, where I match people, right?
That's great.
Yeah, it started in Melbourne. Then when I came to Perth, everyone was like, oh, you're going to end the show. I was like, nah, I'll still continue it. We'll be from the hotel for 2 weeks and then from my mom's house afterwards. And yeah, for like 2 hours, 3 hours every night, I did that. And during the day, I prepared for that. And then I did some workouts in between, then wrote some jokes in between because I need 14 days time. I'll be able to, you know, be out and about in clubs. Yeah. So I had no jokes because in Melbourne, what's the point of writing jokes if you're not going to trial them on actual crowd? So there was no motivation to write whatsoever.
Yeah.
So a lot of my day was spent either going for a walk, exercising, or just contemplating my whole career going, what have I done?
Oh, wow. And how did you cope in Melbourne? Because when it went into, it's gone into massive chaos over there.
Yeah.
How did you cope?
You know what? It takes time for it to really hit you. Because when it first happened, we all just went, we're all in it together. Everyone's in it.
Yeah.
You just stop whinging and get over, like, deal with it. Everyone's going through it.
Yeah.
And then you see other cities coming out of it and they're all doing a little bit more than you guys.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, we're going to be next. So it's cool. And then you get told, oh, guess what? We're all going back to stage one because it's getting worse on our end. So now you're like, oh, no, we're all alone.
Yeah.
We're all going through it by ourselves. And then you realize that it's just more restrictions on top of more restrictions. And then you realize, oh, the clubs is not actually going to open up. And then you're like, oh, man, like, how long can I keep this up? Because, you know, being from Perth, you know, I'm seeing Emo, all my family friends, all my comedian friends just doing these amazing shows. And then I'm like in Melbourne going, I need to get back to Perth. And it was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard. But
and everyone wants to get out of Perth, but everyone's back in now.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
Tables have changed.
The day has come.
Not a bad place to be, is it?
No one thought this day would come, eh?
Yeah. Wait a while. Perth is just a great place. So. Yeah, we're very, very lucky. All right, so a bit of your background. How long, were you guys, I'm going to reflect this on a bit. We've got a show coming up. It's called Coming to Perth. So I thought I'll incorporate that a little bit.
Yeah.
Were you guys born here or did you come to Perth or?
Who's that aimed at?
Or both of you?
Emma was born in Mirrabooka.
So and Joe just up the road in Belgium.
Emma was born right next to the Mirrabooka pond.
No, I was actually born in Ethiopia, in his country.
I didn't even know that, eh?
Yeah, but it was it wasn't glamorous Ethiopia. It was refugee Ethiopia. So,
yeah.
And then we moved from that to another refugee camp in Kenya.
Wow. So, how old were you?
When I was born or?
Oh, no.
It was one, day one.
Ethiopia for about three and a bit years.
Yeah.
And then Kenya were there for about three and a bit years as well.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, I don't remember Ethiopia, but I remember Kenya. Quite well.
Yeah.
Because when I moved here, I was eight. So my memory was quite fresh.
Yeah.
But. So were you ever in South Sudan?
The first time I went to South Sudan was 2009.
Wow.
And that was when my mum took me back home because I was messing up.
She sold it to you as vacation.
Like, you know what? Let's put them in a place where there's no fridges and where everything's on generators. He's going to appreciate what's going on. And yeah, I was stuck there for 3 years. I mean, not for 3 months. 3 months.
3 months.
Yeah, yeah.
What did you learn in that time then?
I never to jump on a plane with my mum again.
Shout out to Imro's mum. I'm loving you.
Yeah, yeah. No, she changed my life. But yeah, I was actually, we were supposed to be there for a lot less, but there was a tribal war that broke out, so the borders got shut, just like in Melbourne right now.
Yeah.
And we were stuck there because planes couldn't come in and cars couldn't drive out. So we were stuck there predominantly for what was probably the worst 2 months. For 2 months. I missed New Year's Eve in Kenya. I missed meeting my grandfather.
Oh, shame.
It was shit house. But
What sort of tribal war had broken out then?
No, you don't need any reasons back home.
Okay.
It's just a Tuesday.
Could be over a cow. You know what I mean? there's always constantly some problems back home. Like tribalism shit.
Yeah.
And it just happened to happen when I was there.
And you seeing that after living here, was it confronting
like Joe said, that's a Tuesday. But it's a normal thing, but it was just more so I was homesick and This was what a standard night was when we were in Bor, like where my parents like grew up.
Mm-hmm. In the middle, Kenya?
No, in South Sudan. Like while you're sleeping. Yeah, and my dad snoring and shit. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So you were waking up to gunfire?
Yeah, I was waking up to rapid fire.
No way.
So that got a bit tired.
Yeah.
I thought it was fireworks. I was going to be like, that's pretty cool. Yeah, fireworks.
That's bullets, you see.
Because even as a traveller for myself, I mean, you guys know here in Perth, we maybe have our police officers with little pistols.
Yeah.
But travelling, you know, you get to see.
Oh, AK-47.
Yes. Yeah. And that always, I find that confronting. I always go, whoa.
Yeah.
It was what are you going to do with that?
It became normal. But I remember when I was there in 2009, they had a lot of the people hand back their guns. But a lot of people still kept their guns. But
it's like if someone hands their guns back, their neighbor's like, oh, okay. I'm gonna hand in mine back, so I'll see you tomorrow.
So like easy target.
I'm just guessing, but
it's heavy over there.
You need it for protection.
You do, man, because everyone, like in my mum's and my father's hometown, like live in huts.
Yeah,
like it's literally like has not evolved since like whatever.
Yeah.
So and they have an excess amount of cows for some reason. Like cows are dowry. So like you marry with cows.
Yeah.
So certain people have like 300 cows, 400 cows.
Yeah. Okay.
And they all know their cows.
Wow.
Like if a cow goes missing, they know that that's my cow.
Where's Samantha?
Yeah. Like they literally know their cows. So like sometimes there's a lot of issues with that.
And just to give me some grasp here, do you eat cow over?
Cow like a champion.
No, well, I just know certain countries don't. You know,
that's India.
I wasn't sure about.
Yeah, but they're horde cows though.
So it's just different.
What's a horde cows?
No, they're like they're hoarders. Like that, they just keep an excess amount of cows,
just in case they see.
Because each cow is like valued at like $300.
Yeah, wow.
So instead So what they should be doing is cashing them in, but you'd be missing out on the milk, right? So cows are currency in like south of Sudan.
Yeah,
they also help you raise the children because of the milk.
Yeah, to be honest, I reckon everyone should just get with the times. Like, you don't need to be paying in cow. And I think once a month or whatever, they'll slaughter a cow and then they'll sell that off and then they'll live off that money.
Okay.
So, it sustains you for a while.
Yeah. And I guess when the cows have calves as well, then you're regenerating your herd anyway. Yeah. So.
But that's their way of living. I've been here since I was 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
That's the fact that you've never been to South Sudan until 2009 is pretty cool. And interesting because I was 34 years old now. I left Sudan when I was 11 and I've never been to Ethiopia. So even now, I've never been. But people, so when I tell my stories and I go back in Sudan, people are looking at me like, I think he forgot where he's from. Yeah, you're Ethiopian. I'm like, oh, am I confusing you guys? Because, you know, I'm Ethiopian, but then I was born in Sudan and I grew up in Perth. And
hell yeah, you're confusing.
Like, your time is up. Tell a joke.
So why, your parents are Ethiopian.
Yeah.
Why were you born in Sudan then?
So mom fled Ethiopia.
There's a minority exchange. I was born in his country and he was born in mine.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, bro.
So my mom fled Ethiopia when she was like probably 13 years old or something, 13, 14 years old. And she made it to Sudan. And that in itself was a crazy, that was during the Civil War as well.
Wow.
And her mom passed away when she was a little bit younger than 13 years old. I think she said her mom was poisoned or something, but they couldn't really work out what really happened to her. It was just a sudden death. And then her dad was a traveling businessman, so he was never really around. And he put her with her stepmom in like a small village. And her stepmom was very abusive to her because she was one of like six kids that the stepmom had to look after. And so my mom fled and just ran away in the hope that something better awaits her. And along that path, obviously, you know, like in Africa at the moment, it's more of a patriarchal society, not so much a matriarch. And so for a young lady or even a woman to be out and about wandering by herself without any male, you know, presence, it's very risky. So there was plenty of times where she was nearly kidnapped, where she was nearly, you know, attempted raped, and just people trying to take advantage of this young girl, right? So some kind people found her and gave her like little jobs here and there, working at hotels, like cleaning and stuff. And eventually she made it to Sudan, where a lady took her in at this cafe. And then my dad was like a traveling soldier, and I think he was fleeing the war as well, and he saw her and married her and took her to Sudan, and that's where they had us.
Oh wow.
So yeah, so that's how I came to be born in Sudan. And then, just came here after that. So I've never been to Ethiopia.
Yeah.
However, I do speak the language a little bit.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah. And my older brother just went just a week before coronavirus was announced. My older brother decided to, you know, he's ready to connect with his roots, his African background.
Oh, my gosh.
So he left Perth. He's a registered nurse in Perth. And he left Perth and went back to Ethiopia. And then a week into his holiday, it was a month holiday, coronavirus restrictions kicked in, and he calls me. He's like, hey, my return flight just got cancelled. I'm like, you should probably look at coming back. And he goes, no, I'm gonna stay. Now it's been nearly 9 months and he can't come back.
He's stuck
there.
Oh joy.
And he's gone from want to connect with my roots to I can't leave this country.
Send milk.
Every time I speak to him, I've run out of cash, can you send me some cash?
No
joke. He just had to do his tax return, and he goes to me, can you find me an accountant to do my tax return? And I go, sure. So I spoke to this accountant. And I go, my brother wants to do his tax. He's like, okay, no worries. I'm like, he's a registered nurse. He's like, okay, no worries. I'm like, he's in Ethiopia. He goes, okay, I'll email him. I said, you can't because the internet's been cut. And he goes to me, why did the internet get cut? I'm like, the government cut it. The whole country has no internet.
So it's blackout.
Yeah. And
Ethiopia needs to pay their bill.
No, there's just like some civil war, potential civil war about to break out due to a death of a famous Ethiopian singer. And so my brother is like, dude, I'm in a hotel and there's people literally rioting outside can't go anywhere. How's my tax return going? And I said, what a clash of two worlds, right?
Yeah.
And so I go to the accountant, oh, I think a civil war is going to break out, so you can't really reach him. And I'm like, hello? Just hang up.
Oh my goodness. So your brother is still there?
Still there.
Has he been able to connect with any family or?
We don't really have family there. You know, but when you go back home, people are always like, yeah, I know you're a family, yeah. But then when you're like there in Africa and you're starving and you're like, where's my family? We didn't have anyone. It was just our immediate families. But here's the crazy thing. I always say Amara, Ima knows him very well. I always say Amara is like the luckiest, unluckiest person I know.
For sure. Really?
Yeah. So this is what I mean by that. So he's like, I need to go back home, works hard as a registered nurse, saves his money, great. Goes to Ethiopia. He's like the king there now because he has money to spend, right? US dollars. Coronavirus restrictions kicks in. He's stuck. 2 months in, he meets a young lady that he fell in love with, marries her. Now they live together.
Oh Oh my gosh, so your brother got married during this time?
Yeah.
That's so beautiful, but
it's confusing.
No, it's so lovely.
We use the word confusing. Like we don't use beautiful.
It's like snubbing your toe and finding a dollar.
Oh, what a dollar bar. That's fantastic. Yeah.
People go, how did you find out? We said, well, really? Facebook, because we saw the pictures on Facebook. But he's happy. My older brother's always like, he just lives in the moment.
Yeah.
So, and he calls me and he's like, oh man, marriage life is so hard, bro, you know? Like this and that and this. I said, man, it's only been 2 months. I go, give it time, you know, it'll get worse.
You barely know this girl, so come on. All right, I'm getting swept away with the moment too. But
we'll get back to
beautiful.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're very happy for him.
Yeah, I wish him all the best too.
Shouts out to Mara.
Yeah. Okay, so where did you guys begin your comedy journeys then?
Emo began in Mirabooka. So everything started there.
And Joe was just up the street in Belgrade. Now, my one actually started because of this man.
Oh, really?
Yes, he had started on comedy before I did. And like leading up to when he was about to do it, he was inviting me to come watch and also telling me, you should get into this thing that I tried, it's comedy. And I would shrug it off to the point where I was like ghosting him.
Yeah.
Like I stopped picking up his calls.
It was like an ex-girlfriend I'm trying to get back, you know.
Because we'd catch up and it would be like, yeah, let's catch up and we'll catch up, whatever. And then somehow, some way, he would slip in comedy. Like you need to jump up, you need to do it. And then one day he did a live stream at the Lawley Cafe. I actually just drove past it just earlier.
Oh.
And he had me on on Facebook Live. And he put me on the spot. He's like, so Emo said he's going to be doing comedy. When can we expect you to? And the first thing that I could think of was, 3 months is like a long way away. I was like, all right, 3 months from now. He's like, all right, you heard it, ladies and gentlemen. In November, he'll be doing his first gig. So I had to do it, man. Well done.
Well played.
Mm. Yes. I actually tell the story a little bit more truthful. So this is my version of it. I was like, Emo, man, you got to do comedy, you know, because you're so funny. And he's like, nah, man, it's not my thing. You know, it's your thing. I'm like, all right, no worries. And then I'll do a show and then I'll go, come to this show because I know the setup, the crowd's going to be awesome, right?
Yeah.
And I want him to see that.
That vibe.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, once you do stand up once, it's like this hit that you just need more. So I wanted him to experience that. And I wanted him to see it first so he can say yes. So I go, Emo, come check out this show. Just watch me perform and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, all right, no worries, I'll come through. He comes through and I perform. And then the crowd afterwards, oh, man, great show. That was a great set, you know. And I go, Emo, you know, you could be doing this. You know, you could be getting this type of like great work, blah, blah, blah. He's like, nah, it's not my thing. But I can see he's thinking about it now, right? And then I did another show. It was a big show, this one. It was part of Fringe.
I thought it was the boat one.
Is it boat one?
Because you did the boat one, the boat party one.
Okay, yeah. So you came to a couple of shows.
Yeah.
So there's, and then another time it was... So we did a couple more shows and then he just kept seeing the vibe, you know?
Yeah.
And then these lovely ladies came up to me and they said, wow, that was a really great show. Here's my number. And then Emo said, hey, how do I do this comedy thing?
There's my truth, his truth, and then their truth.
No, that last part, I lied. I lied about that last part. But I think it's just that I wanted him to see that vibe, you know? Because the reason why I chose I went through a list of friends that I grew up with that were funny.
So you guys grew up together? Is that I just want to clarify this here because it sounds like you've known each other for a long time.
We met in like 97 or 98.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So as grew up pups, in the north.
Like,
through school or?
No, Garawing. Like, because Africans were scarce back then.
Mm. Yeah.
So like you knew everybody.
We were scarce like, commodity back then.
Yeah. Like you see one, you're like, hey, check this out.
It's crossing the park.
Where did you guys actually meet then?
Garawing.
Was it Ferrara Park?
Yeah, Garawing, Ferrara Park. Park,
just hanging out, or
it was just
a black guy. And I saw a black guy
play soccer. we all just catch up in this parade.
All the immigrants, all the immigrants, all the immigrants. So
you can't make this shit up.
Yeah,
we're just like, wow, there's a lot of Africans here. Let's
literally
play soccer.
All the immigrants. Like you'd find like Iraqi immigrants, Monty. Yeah. Remember Monty? You'd find like Sierra Leone ones, Sudan, Kenyans. Like it was just immigrants.
Yeah.
All just speaking
and
English
was it like
messed
a made
up
sort of group way.
So I see what you mean. The thing that brought us together,
yeah,
soccer.
Yeah, soccer. Yeah, soccer. Soccer did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a matter of like call each other and meet up. Like it would be, you'd meet up at a certain time. If they weren't there, they would be coming or they had just left.
Yeah. Okay.
So you'd have to stick around or take off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the one of the main reasons why I sourced out my friends to try and teach them stand-up comedy for them to do it is because when I came into the scene, I didn't see any other Africans doing it beside one, which was Nat. But there was, I think there was a huge age difference between me and Nat. Yeah. Also, our upbringing was so different. We didn't really connect, right? So he was doing his thing, I was doing my thing. But I could see that there was no Africans in there, like black Africans. And so I wanted diversity and I saw the lack. And so I said, well, I know a lot of funny Africans, but just like them, I didn't know that this was possible.
Yeah.
You know? So I was like, well, how do I teach them, show them? And then if they want to do it, then I'll expand on helping them and encouraging them along the way. And guide them, you know, which is something that I didn't have, but I had indirectly. So I went through the list and emo was on top of the list, you know. Every time growing up when we're at house parties, when we walk in, it's always like, all right, time to start making fun of each other. And we'll just roast each other and people will decide just who
roasting
won.
Always.
100%.
Like, we'll never leave without like a sore stomach.
Oh, that's so good.
Just constantly back and
that
forward.
That big belly laugh is great, isn't it?
Yeah. And it was always like, who can get the better of the other one? You know what I mean?
I'm not going to lie, I always won.
Nah, see, there's his truth and then there's the truth.
I honestly always won. And
then
I
there's
felt
the
bad.
Truth, like I told you.
Yeah.
Many nights I felt bad, you know, I had to message him, emo, sorry I had to roast you so hard.
lies upon lies.
Oh, that's great. What has been your biggest learning curve or bomb on stage?
Of bombing?
Yeah, or learning curve, whichever you want to focus on.
Well, for me, it's what has been my biggest learning curve. No one likes a silent room. Mm. That will check you because you can go from your last gig being absolutely sick.
Yeah.
Like you got this high, right? This euphoria from all the applause and the laughter and people yelling out. You know what I mean? And then you can have a gig, which you might have thought last night was so awesome, I'd have to practice for tonight's one.
Yeah.
And the crowds are completely different. You don't do your research. That's a learning curve. Like every room is different.
Yeah,
definitely. You can't expect that every room or every crowd is going to like the same joke, but you know it's going to work.
Yeah.
But you still got to practice and execute it the way that you know works.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so do you go in and you look at the crowd before you get on stage?
Oh, yeah. I'm always early for it. With comedy, I'm never late.
Yeah.
Like I am never late for comedy. I'm at least 15 minutes minimum.
Yeah.
And about half an hour when I have a gig. So I'm never late.
That's a good idea.
I take that very seriously.
Yeah. Like, that's good.
But I'm late for everything else.
Emote, your child is here. Where are you?
I'll be there in a second. I'm checking the score.
She's giving birth.
Yeah, you always have to set the crowd, man. Like, and you always watch the last person as well.
Mm.
Because they are your opening door to, no feminist jokes tonight. You know what I mean?
Yeah, okay.
Better not talk about kids. They're very young. They ate all that up.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? So you always gotta like pay attention to the previous person.
Yeah,
and also being nice and early so you can actually check out the crowd so you can figure out what was said. You can have callbacks from someone else's joke as well. That works amazing.
True,
so
it does, doesn't it? Yeah, ties the night in.
So if you pay attention, you end up having a real good gig.
Yeah, very clever. What about yourself, Joey?
From bombing, I wouldn't say it teaches me anything in terms of like. You know, in terms of being a better human, but in terms of being like a better performer, then bombing it's good for it. I don't enjoy it. I try to avoid it.
Who does?
You know, but some people just, like you just see some comics going up there and bombing and you're like, why would you come up with that material?
How do you keep doing this?
Yeah, I'm like, how does this person keep bombing, like putting up with it?
It didn't work last time.
So with me, it's just, it obviously teaches me that the joke needs work. It teaches me to be a bit more flexible when I'm on stage. So if I'm, you know, if I do a certain joke or I go a certain angle and I'm bombing, it's like, how do I recover? And a lot of the time, I think when I started especially, bombing just taught me to improve my crowd work.
Yeah.
You know, so when I'm doing a joke and I'm bombing and then I do a second joke and it's still bombing and I'm like, ooh. I don't know, I guess I have to connect with them somehow, do something on the spot. So then I'll crowd work. And that's how I started to develop my crowd work skills. So it definitely taught me to crowd work. Other than that, it's just, it's a humbling moment. A nice pie. When it does happen.
It's a nice pie, yeah. It's a humble pie, yeah. So anyone that says they don't bomb, that's a lie. And it's actually very good if you bomb, because of course you avoid it.
And it's
But how is that thrill ever going to be there if you don't avoid it?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
I think it's a great learning curve for bombing.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, and it's not even the comics at times. It's more so the crowd, you know? Yeah. They go, no, it's not the crowd. It's the jokes or the comic. Nah, bullshit. It's the crowd sometimes. I did this gig in Adelaide and we had the crowd come out. And I was doing 10-minute set only. And everyone looked about 60 and above. I'm not going to lie, right?
Yeah.
And there was a jazz show. But the booker knew me. And he said, hey, can you just come up and do like 10 minutes, warm them up? Yeah. So like, sure. And I did 10 minutes. Went amazing. Second crowd comes in. Same type of crowd. Same show. Jazz show. 10 minutes before. And I did, I have never forgotten it. In Adelaide Fringe 2017. 10 minutes of silence.
Ooh. Wow. Right?
And all I kept hearing was, ooh, jeez. Ooh,
yeah, ouch. Ooh.
And then one lady in the front was just having the time of her life. She was just laughing so loud that you could, she made
echoing.
Up. She was just looking back at the same time while laughing. And then I'm like, I just started performing to her. I'm like, I'm just glad you're here, you know.
You've had a sympathetic, aw.
No, she no joke. I'm not making this up. She came backstage afterwards, gave me a hug and said, honey, I thought you were fantastic. I don't know what happened.
Thanks, like, mum.
Yeah. That's what I said. I was like, that makes both of us.
Wow.
Yeah, that was shocking though. It took me 2 days.
It didn't hinder her experience. And that's pretty powerful as well for her to be able to be present with you and hold space with you, because you didn't lose her. So
no, I just focused on her and I'm like, guys, this is what you're all missing out on. Look at her. You
know? Happiness.
Yeah.
But it was just weird. It was the weirdest gig I've ever done.
What's the weirdest? That is your weirdest one?
That is the weirdest. Yeah,
yeah, what's yours?
Man, Monday and Joe's. The second gig I ever.
That is the best.
So after this high of doing Shapiro's the night before, like my first ever gig, I hit up Joe. I'm like, Joe, that was amazing, man. Do you have any other spots that you know I can hit up? He goes, yep, call this guy. His name is Nick Hunter. He'll have a spot for you at a place called Monday and Joe's.
Yep.
So I'm going there expecting that all comedy rooms are like Shapiro's, like 60 plus people.
Yep.
I get there and there was, I think, like 9 people and 3 of them I bought. And, man, it was 5 minutes of silence. Even the people that I was with were laughing. And for a whole entire year, I didn't do comedy again.
Didn't you?
No, until he came back to me and asked me to do a split bill for Fringe.
Wow. And here's the thing. As someone who has your best interests at heart, comedy-wise, and always, and always wanted you to do well, and still continue to do so, I did not recommend Moondyne Jones. Because here's the thing. I've emceed that gig before.
He kept quiet about it too.
It's the worst of the worst, right?
He kept quiet about it.
But here's the thing. You did Shapiro's. I recommended you to start at Shapiro's. Yeah. Why? Because I knew Shapiro's was like one of the hottest, best rooms ever. Everyone's friendly. Yeah. And I knew that reception was going to get him hooked and he was going to do it again.
Yeah.
But then I was like, now you have to hustle and set up your own gigs. I'm done.
Yeah,
right?
Okay.
Then he calls me and he goes, yo, I've got this next gig. I'm going to do a spot at Moondyne Jones. And my heart dropped for him a little bit. Because I already knew what high he was at from Shapiro's.
Yeah.
And now I knew.
And he couldn't tell me.
Where Moondyne Jones was going to take him. And so I said, oh, okay. And he's like, why? What's wrong? And I said, look, I'm not going to say anything. Do the room and then call me after. Straight after. I didn't hear from him for 24 hours.
I just cursed him. I'm like, that Joe, he's dead. As soon as I see him, he's dead.
Sells me the world and takes it back. So that's not around as far as I know anymore, is it?
It's not around, yeah. No. I think it but ended when there was a fight at the front.
Oh yeah. That
different demographic, obviously.
That gig that I did, someone got knocked out.
What?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
There was an ambulance and everything. Like, the it had everything. Like,
so it was a rough room.
It sounds it.
It was rough, yeah.
You didn't want to say the wrong thing on stage. You might have got knocked out.
No, you said anything and everything. It's just the crowd didn't care.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like, that was rough. And I said, I didn't do comedy for
a year.
For a whole entire year. Not because of that room, but back then, the competitiveness of comedy and the selfishness, it's mine, was very active then.
Okay.
Like, comics wouldn't tell you where you can get like certain rooms or which ones to book. And Shapiro's are always like 5 or 6 weeks of a waiting list.
Yeah. So like they do have a bit of a waiting list, don't they?
They did.
Not anymore.
They're shut down now.
Oh, I know. It's so sad, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, great
memories. They'll be back because they'll be.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, they're moving to.
It's the room in general, not so much.
The room's cool, but the room was amazing. The classroom effect. It's just that. Yeah.
The laughs were contained.
Are they tearing it down or? No.
Nah. It's just, I think they're going to have quiz nights there or something.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So they are, I think they're, I think they'll take that vibe with them. You know, Sam's pretty awesome and.
I hope so.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah, they have created an amazing space. That was a great room. They worked very hard.
A lot of people started there.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah. I think it will continue. They've got I can't remember the hotel that they're moving to. Anyway.
It's on Fitzgerald Street, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, nice. So they've got another joint?
Yeah, they do.
The Hyatt?
Nah, Fitzgerald Street. I've been there a couple of times for club events.
Yeah.
Okay.
On the corner next to the liquor store.
Yes.
Which liquor store?
On the corner.
Anyway. Why would I know it now? Because you said next to a liquor store.
Yeah. Come on, mate. You're a booker?
Nah. People can look it up anyway, but I'm sure because it's them that's continuing with it, the vibe will still stay. Good.
They can always build it back up.
Yeah, I think so. Okay, what was the best moment as a performer for you both?
Best moment was performing in Melbourne for the Royal Comedy Festival.
Yeah.
That was, to this very day, my biggest crowd. I think it was like 3,000 plus.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't even like looking back at the recording of it because I've come so far as a performer.
Yeah.
But I like to relive moments from that.
Yeah.
Because of how electric that energy was.
Yeah.
And I'll to this very day, I still chase that high.
Yeah,
I mean, so
how do you manage 3,000 people? But yeah, that's incredible.
It's not the last one, so keep aiming high, right?
Yeah, it's huge.
You just perform, eh? Like you're performing to a small room.
Oh, it's nicer actually.
Is that?
Yeah, yeah. Like my theory is, if you're in a room full of 10 people, you make 2 laugh. And then you just keep doubling that up. It's always gonna be more contagious with the more people.
Yeah.
And also, you're guaranteed someone laughing anyway, right?
Yeah.
So, woo! Thank God for that lady in the front.
Great. What about you, Joe?
I would say, for anyone that knows me, knows the relationship that I have with my mum. It's probably the best thing about me.
Yeah.
And so when I performed at Fringe back in 2018, it was one of my shows where my mom was in the room and she was in her full traditional Ethiopian attire. Mm-hmm. And so after we finished, I said, oh, by the way, I want to bring this woman up, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then I introduced my mom and she was like, I don't want to go up because there were stairs leading to the stage.
Yeah.
So she didn't want to climb the stairs. But I didn't know. I was just like, come on, mom. So when she got to the stairs and she just paused and gave me the dirtiest look and then it's like, climb the stairs. And I was like, oh, that's why. But she came on stage, took a bow. I got my sister to come up as well. And we all just took a bow.
Yeah.
Because the material surrounded, it's about my family. So. Yep. They're all over the show anyways in terms of content. So it was good to have them there so people can put a face to the jokes, you know.
Yeah.
And when I go, oh, my mom, you know, she's always in her traditional attire all year round, even when it's hot, blah, 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 blah. And people think I'm just joking. So when she was there and she was up on her wearing her traditional attire, they're like, oh, yeah. So that was a good moment for me. We all took a bow and, you know.
Oh, that is beautiful. One of the most beautiful, tender moments I've seen on your Facebook feed recently is when you came out of quarantine and you hugged your mum. Yeah. And you could just feel that vibe. It's just beautiful, you know. Yeah, you can see there's a lot of love there and very genuine special. Love, yeah.
And there's a lot of fake things on social media, but that one thing with my mum, the relationship, everyone, all my brothers and sisters are always like, oh, I think Joe's her favorite. And she's like, no, I love you all the same. And then she will hug me, you know. And I'm like, yes, mum, keep lying. And she feels so bad. She's just like, get away from me. You're taking all their blessings. Get away from it.
Oh, I love it. All right. How have you guys developed your careers then in comedy, I mean?
In terms of?
Just how
far have we gotten?
What have you done? What year did you start? We'll start with that. And then have you developed from there?
So 2016 was the first ever gig that I did. Yep. And then, like I said, I did that next day. And then didn't do anything for a whole entire year.
Yep.
Until he came back and approached me to do a split bill for Fringe.
Can you give me a name? this man to my right.
He is the cat's mother.
Who sits there. Yeah,
that's when
Joe says nothing until
Joe
I'm done.
Joe hit me up and asked me if I was interested in doing a split bill for Fringe. And at the time, do you remember, I didn't even know what raw comedy was. and we were practicing for the split bill, which I had not taken seriously. And he goes, have you also applied for raw? I was like, what's that? He's like, only the biggest comedy competition. I'm like, nah, I didn't. And my then girlfriend heard that, went in the house, came back. She's like, oh, done. You're like, so she registered me for Raw. At this point, I probably only had like 6 or 7 gigs under my belt.
Yeah.
And I think it was 2 weeks later, I was to go perform for Raw. And Fringe hadn't started yet as well. So I performed for Raw. They wildcarded me. Then they called me back to be the wildcard. Got into the semis, then won that. And since then, and then we did our Fringe show, the White vs Black. I played a persona, Joe Black.
Yeah.
And it was Joe White as the split bill as well. So that was my introduction to Fringe. And it took a while to shake that name too. Like, for a while, people were yelling, "Hey, Joe Black!" And I'm like, "No, that's not my name.
That's a character."
Yes, and I've been doing Fringes every year.
Yeah,
and I've also performed in Sydney, New York, and Montreal.
Oh wow!
And Toronto.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's as far as I've gone so far.
That's wicked fun. Yeah.
He's done an amazing job for the period he's been in it. Mm. And, you know, I always encourage him to just aim high, aim stupidly high.
Yeah.
And then just go for it, you know. And I always tell Emo, like, when you do that, people around you, whether family, friends or comics, are always going to project their uncertainty on you, you know, or their fears on you. And not to get sidetracked and to just focus and just go for it and make that mistake.
Yeah.
Because when you make that mistake, you still end up performing in places like Montreal, New York.
Yeah.
You still end up performing on SBS in Melbourne, yep. You know, as part of the festival. You still end up winning Raw WA Comedy. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you still.
That's crazy,
so,
isn't it?
Yeah. And there was a lot of naysayers as well.
Yeah. I remember, you know, sometimes he would give me a call and he'd be like, hey, this happened with such and such. It's like, how would I handle it? And I've already been through that. So I just say, because I know how I wish I would have handled things. Yeah. You know what I mean? So then I go, Emo, handle it this way because this way is in your best interest. So it's never about getting even. It's more so about getting ahead in your craft and being able to grow at a not at a normal pace, because normal is different to everyone, but more so at a pace that you deserve to, being able to be in a platform or position to be able to impact, you know.
It's very wise, actually, Jory. So it's good you've got each other to bounce off.
Yeah,
of
for
these,
sure.
You know?
I call him all the time, like whenever I'm confused about something.
Yeah.
Sometimes in the oddest hours.
Emo, it's 3 a.m. What happened? The police are here.
Can it wait? Yeah, I guess so.
The police are here. What kind of joke have you been telling? Is this a joke? This is the worst joke. So he's been doing well, you know. Like, I'm very proud of you, man. And
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, so just wanted to put that out there.
Helped out a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely helped me out a lot in terms of comedy.
Now give me that money you owe me now.
Here's your 63 cents. And he's always encouraged me to just, if I think I can do it, just do it.
Yeah.
Like, we're doing a theatre show. On the 31st of October.
Yeah.
At the Heath Ledger State Theatre.
Awesome.
And like I said, there's always been like naysayers along the way. Like, I think I remember a comic once saying, putting up a post saying, do you think it's too early to do a Fringe show on your first year? Or should you fake it and make it? Like, something along those lines. And I knew where it was semi-directed because I had spoken to a comic before.
Oh.
But it doesn't.
There's a lot of politics in the game, but ultimately it's like, don't even give any negativity, that attention. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? If there's, look at it, don't even speak about it. You know, look at it. If you don't see there's growth in it for you in there, don't even pursue it.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Don't even give it your time. Just like, just focus on executing whatever goals you want to execute.
That's
so
right.
that you yeah. can just get to the next level. Because eventually all that bickering and the politics means nothing to you if you're on level 10 and that bickering is on level 2. I can assure you, like, as you climb as a comic, there's less bickering because everyone's so busy. Like, everyone's busy with wife and kid. Everyone's busy with their TV deals. Everyone's busy with their theater deals. Everyone's busy with the headlining the biggest rooms Australia wide. Everyone's busy writing TV shows. Do you know what I mean? So as you climb, no, you'd find that there's no time for bickering and little politics.
Yeah.
So when you do see the other person, it's like, oh yeah, I remember, how was the, you know, blah, blah, blah deal, or how was headlining this or that. So everyone's like operating on this awesome frequency, you know, which is what we aim to get to as performers.
That's what's
so don't let the bottomness behavior
never
consume you.
No, never.
Or slow you down.
No, that's true. Yeah, there will be people that try to hold you back, won't there? And just,
you've got to let, in any field, your journey is your journey.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Absolutely.
Work with me or watch me work.
Yeah.
You could be anywhere in any field. It's not just comedy. There's always naysayers. There's always people who doubt you. There's always shitty situations, but that's where we grow, right?
Yeah.
So I always just say, if you feel like you need to go through it because there's a learning in there, go through it.
Yeah,
if you
definitely.
Don't, then don't.
And Joe, what about your background then? Where did you start comedy and
where have you taken it? Man, you know, I had this, so Emo knows my, I was engaged to my ex-fiance, right? And I'm okay to talk about it now, but we were together for 10 years, engaged on the 9th year, and then the relationship ended. She ended the relationship, yeah. So that sent me down like a dark path. And I wasn't a comedian then, I was a business banker for Bankwest. So I had this corporate life, this suit life, and I had a property, a mortgage in Merriwa, you know, finally out of Mirrabooka. So I thought, like, we made it, right? So when that happened, the breakup happened, I was shook. Yeah. And I guess I went down this self-discovery path of trying to sort of be a better human, a more contributor than what I was already doing. And then by some joking manner, my sister went and saw like a psychic, right? Like, and a medium by the name of, I think it was Annette Christopoulos or something. She was in Malaga. Mm-hmm. And she saw her by like accident. She was just in Malaga shops and went, oh, cool. You know, what's this? And walked in.
Yeah.
And she goes, welcome, come this way. And she gave her this. And she's like, dude, it was like something out of a movie. This lady dressed strangely welcomes me in, very loving. Then we do this whole exchange and she tells me things that freaked me out to the point where I cried and ran home, right? Not ran home, but drove home. But she was in tears and called me. That's the relationship I have with my sister.
Yeah,
right?
She's just beautiful. Yeah,
Elsa. So she called me and she's like, I need you to come over. And I went over and she tells me all these insane things this lady said to her that only Elsa knows and the people that passed away that were good friends with Elsa.
Yeah.
And she's like, as a joke, she goes, I reckon it'll be funny if you went and saw her or fun to see what she'll say about you because you just had this 10-year relationship that everyone thought you were going to get married and have kids that just ended. And you're not sure about anything really. I'm like, you know,
do we get our engagement gifts back from you?
Oh, because you came to the engagement party and you bought gifts. Oh man. You know what? You can have your multi rider back. Sorry, man.
Sorry, Mirrabooka.
So I said, yeah, that'll be cool. You know, at the time I was sort of on this venturous path where I just did everything and anything to sort of learn more about life and myself as a human being. And so I went and saw this lady and I was just with a smile and everything, you know. And she just said things to me that, again, blew my mind away that only I knew. And I was so freaked out. And then I said, okay, what about my career path? I'm in the bank. Is that my path? And she was like laughing. She goes, that's not your path, you know. I see you doing something on stage. Are you a rapper? And I'm like, now you're stereotyping, right? This is what I said. And then she started laughing. And she goes, okay, what do you do on stage? I was like, nothing. I'm a banker. And she just goes, it's not your career path. You just enjoy telling people off or you enjoy telling people what to do. And I was like, a little bit true, you know.
Yeah.
And then I said, well, on stage. And just before I left, I go to her, oh, I actually wrote like a page of jokes wanting to try stand-up. Because I'm just on this path of wanting to try anything and everything. And it was like a light bulb went off in her head. And she's like, that's what you're supposed to do. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right, no worries, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to leave my corporate job where I worked 3 years, I'm nearly on 100 grand a year to do comedy. And yeah, and she just said, you have to do it. When I left, she actually messaged me. She's like, you have to do it. Don't forget me. This is what you're supposed to do. It's your path. If you don't do it, you're going to be a 50-year-old man and you're going to regret the way you lived your life. And those, that's
freaky.
That's what freaked me out. And that's what made me go, I'm on this path of self-discovery, meaning I'm not going to be scared to take risk to grow. Mm. And she said something to me where she said, you know, if you do this, you're going to be an old man and regret the way you lived. And I said, that can't be a chance, so I have to try it. And she goes, by the way, have fun in Melbourne. And I was like, Melbourne? Why Melbourne? And she goes, I see you going there in a few months' time, very soon. It's going to be a great business venture. I'm like, what is she talking about, right? I said, all right, no worries. I went online to try stand-up in Perth. I emailed so many people in Perth. One got back to me and said, I'm in the States, we're not doing shows anymore. And then I'm like, all right, cool. And then I tried emailing other people, no one. And then I saw 5 weeks in Sydney or 5 nights in Melbourne comedy classes, Australian Stand-Up School of Comedy. And it was in gold and it was flashing, you know. So I called my boss in the bank and I said, can I take 7 days off? She goes, Joe, you're going through a 10-year breakup. Take time off. You haven't. I was like, okay, cool. Called the guy up. He said, you're going to come all the way from Perth? And he was African-American. I was like, yeah, is that okay? And he goes, yeah, I mean, that's commitment. He goes, all right, can you pay now? I go, yep. So I paid with card. And he actually goes to me, one person just cancel so you can take their spot. I'm like, beautiful.
Wow, that's freaking.
So then I was in Melbourne doing stand-up comedy, finished like a 7-day course, came back and for like 3 months sussed out the scene in Perth. And then eventually I did my first gig at Shapiro's and I cried on the way home and I was hitting that steering wheel. And I was like, I had to go through Africa, 10-year breakup, all that. To just find my purpose. And I'm so glad I went to the psychic. I'm so glad I did stand-up comedy. And I haven't stopped since then.
That's what's up.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys. That took a while to get through. But I had to do it justice. Because it's just crazy the way things played out.
Yeah.
It worked out.
But how awesome is it that you stepped into it and not away from it? You didn't stop. That's terrific.
When I was in Melbourne going through ISO, I put up a post saying, man, I left my banking job and here I am in isolation now, eating 2-minute noodles, right? As a joke. And the psychic lady commented, she goes, you know you have a bright future ahead of you. Stay on track. Things will get better. I promise you, right? And I was like, and then she messaged me and she's like, I'm very proud at the fact that you didn't back away from your reading. You actually went forward and you were brave enough to do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
But yeah, more to come.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Me too.
It's very cool.
It's a journey, you know.
It is a journey. Sure. I do have some random questions for you guys. And I laugh when I have this question because it's so relative for you with something you posted anyway. So,
shit.
What is the most ridiculous thing or way someone has tricked you into doing or believing?
Wow. So wow.
And I was thinking, I usually do ask this every now and then. I was reflecting on what you posted yesterday. So,
which post?
Which post?
Mm.
You're
gonna play dumb, eh?
No, man, I am the biggest sucker. I got finessed for $850 from a.
Can you tell everyone about that? Because yes. I thought I was gonna ask this question.
Explain what finesse means first.
Someone eased their way into my pocket.
So scam. That's the word.
Yeah.
So I had contacted PayPal because I did a lot of shopping like a lot of people during isolation, and some of them hadn't arrived. So I was calling to cancel some of them.
Yeah.
And the first number that came up when you type in Google, PayPal contact, this is what came up.
Wow. And that's wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. And to add insult to injury, the people that pick it up on the other side.
Yeah.
Answer the phone with, welcome to PayPal. How may I help you?
Yeah.
But they're not PayPal.
Yeah.
They're all the way in India. And that's nothing sus because every time I call Vodafone, my bank, it's always somewhere in India. So like I've become desensitized to that, right? So so the dude ends up telling me, all right, cool, we're going to refund you your money. We just need the card number that you had purchased whatever from. Mm-hmm. So I gave him my card number. He goes, we need the security number, you know, the CCV, whatever, at the back.
Yeah.
I gave it to him. He goes, your bank is going to contact you right now. It's going to send you a message with a code. Let me know what that code is. I am thinking, like, I'm far from even thinking I'm getting scammed.
No, I wouldn't think
how
that
would
either.
He know that my bank's about to contact me?
Mm.
So I get the text message, and I gave him the code. He goes, that one didn't work. I'm going to send you another code. What he was actually doing, and on my phone, when I was reading the text messages, he was trying to take out $8,000.
Wow.
He tried $6,000, $4,000, until he eventually settled for the $850 because I have my accounts like separately. So he ended up taking $850 out of that one. But meanwhile, he's telling me that code didn't work. I'm going to call my colleague and I'll call you back in 10, 15 minutes. I said, cool. When you call me in 10, 15 minutes, have your manager with you because this has been going on for too long. Mm. And he goes, no worries, I'll have a manager with me. And long story short, the theater show that I'm hosting, so I had the venue hire payments to make yesterday. So I went on my bank to transfer some money from account to account so I could pay the theater. Because there's two lump sums of payments. And so as I'm doing that, the first thing I noticed was the $850 that just come out of my account.
Ouch.
And I'm like,
and that's so much money, isn't
yep.
it?
Like, and right, it couldn't be huge. Anyone else because it said Delhi.
Oh my god.
Yeah, man,
I love bills,
yeah. Yeah, man. I've been so mad, man. And then I tried to call PayPal. PayPal washed their hands clean of it. They're like, you didn't call us. But my whole thing is Hungry Jack's right now is getting taken to court by McDonald's because of the Big Jack.
Oh, really?
Yeah. These big companies will sue you as soon as you're using their name in the wrong light. How's PayPal allowing another company to use their name and logo? And there's a whole article on it, like people that have been ripped off.
Even the ACCC, and I mean, even our government's restricting our news or whatever now. You'd think that this is a pretty big thing.
The bank told me, we don't have to call them because it's not our job. You can call up the frauds department. I'm thinking, why is PayPal even allowing someone to use their name in a bad light? Because you must be losing business.
Yeah.
Yeah. So right now I'm just waiting for the process to get the $850 back.
But I hope you get it back.
I feel like such a sucker too because as I recount the conversation that was going on, I'm like, man, why the hell was I giving him the code? But it was all happening so fast, right? And like I didn't assume anything of it.
No,
and this is the first time that's ever happened, so that hurts even more because I'm like, I've lasted 31 years.
Yeah. Oh, it's probably a really raw thing never for been, me to bring up.
Yeah, nah, it's all good. Like, I'll be over it within. I told Joe outside. I said I'm gonna give myself 3 days, and I'm just gonna leave it in the back of my mind. Like, I'm just gonna delete because it's bad energy. Like, to be cursing this guy out while I go to bed.
I don't want to be sleeping on that. What about yourself, Joe? Has anyone ever tricked you?
Yeah, I was telling Emma, I actually got scammed as well. So, yeah, we're not. See, the thing is, growing up in like Mirabuka and Balga, you don't get trained very well. It's usually how to scam, not how to avoid scammers, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I remember when I toured Canada in 2017, I needed accommodation in Montreal and I was in Vancouver at the time and I literally had like 2-3 weeks before I need to be in Montreal. I need accommodation, otherwise I'm going into a hotel room. So I registered on easyroommate.com, right? And someone took my details from easyroommate.com and had all the information about me. They said, hey, we're from easyroommate.com and we know you're looking for a place. Would you be interested in this place? And sent me this place, which is like, $4,000 a month at least by the looks of it. It just looks immaculate. It looks amazing apartment. And he's like, do you want this apartment? And I said, yeah, it's very cheap because he dropped it, he said, from like about that $4,000 to like $1,000, right?
Mm.
And I said, yeah, sure, I'll take it. And he goes, okay, we just need deposit ASAP because there's people lining up for it. I'm like, yeah, how do I act on it quickly? And he sent me like a contract.
Look legit.
And said, yeah, read this, complete it, and sign off on it virtually and return it to me. And so I completed it, signed off, returned it. He goes, okay, we need deposit. How can you pay? I said, well, I can transfer. And he goes, no, we need it. Like, we'll send you a code and we need you to go to like an ATM, Bitcoin ATM, and deposit into this ATM. Okay. I go, all right, cool. So I'm in Vancouver. I'm going, geez, they do business really strange here, you know, because I'm like, why can't I just transfer? I'm like, all right, anyways, I need to get this accommodation. Otherwise, I'm homeless when I get to Montreal. So I make my way to this ATM in the shadiest place I've ever seen in my life, which is downtown Vancouver. Mm. It's just homeless people and people that are just not there everywhere, like literally hundreds of them, straight a whole town of them. Wow. To the point where even I'm not scared, but at the same time, I was like, if I get attacked, which I probably will, so I'm like walking around with this self-defense vibe. And I went into this hotel, shady looking hotel, and I go to the lady, is there an ATM here apparently where I need to deposit money? She goes, oh, that ATM there. I go, all right. And I go, what's going on with everyone here? And she's just like, look, it's a lot of, this is where the main drug addicts hang out. And she goes, they won't touch you, but obviously don't roam around at night. I'm like, all right, cool. And she was right. You'd walk past them. No one would say anything, but people were just like zombies. And I got footage of it to prove it as well. And then I deposited into the ATM $500 and something, $50. And then I went back home and I messaged the person, like, how could you send me to a place like this? This is very unprofessional. I'm going to put in a complaint, blah, blah, blah. The person, very apologetic, they said, look, we're sorry. We just also need you to deposit another $500 if that's okay, so that we can really give you this place. And I was like, I'm not depositing and I'm not going back there again. I said, in fact, give me back my money. I'm not interested, right?
Yeah.
And then I didn't hear from the person. Then I called up. Is your roommate? And then they said, no, you got scammed. I'm like, damn it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, that's a finesse.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So I was so pissed off, Emo, that the person messaged me again and said, look, we're going to give you your money back, but we just, like, if you're still looking for a place, like, you might as well just add another 500 and let's just, like, get you this place because it looks nice. Right?
He's trying to get another.
So yeah, he's still trying to.
Still trying. But now I know it's a scam, right? Yeah. So I'm like, all right, how do I get even with this person? This is what I was operating from, a lower self. So I'm like, how do I get even? I was so mad, right? I'm like, all right. I said, okay, well, look, I don't even like this place. So I'm messaging them. I don't even like this place. Can you find me another place? I want one a bit more expensive, you know, because I'm performing. I make like, you know, 20,000, 30,000 per shows. And this place.
So you're really talking.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm like, this place is, you know, it's not really my style. Find me one that's more expensive. I'll deposit more. You know, I'll deposit a higher number. Person's like, okay, no worries, I'll get back to you. So they send me through all this, and it obviously takes work, right? Yeah. I'm like, send me a couple to choose from. So for them to find the apartment, to get the paperwork, save it, put it into a PDF format, put it into an email, shoot it through, takes time. Yeah. So they'll send me all this and I'd be like, nah, this is not good. I don't like the way this looks. You know, this wall is here. The whole setting is just not my vibe. Can you do it again? You know, send me another one. And they just kept doing it. And then I'm like, I asked you, and I started getting more abrupt with them and just like putting them down and just being hell mean and obnoxious toward them. And the guy's, you think you can talk to me like this? And then I was like, hold on, I'm out of Australia and in this part of the world, they have the right to bear arms. So I should probably, and that's where I called it. And I'm like, performing.
So had you sort of decided, okay, I've lost that money, I'm not getting it back.
Yeah.
I'm just going to mess with this person now.
It's still marinating for me. So I'm waiting for 3 days. I'm hoping I can be in a calm place like you are, bro.
I did it straight away, man. Straight away, I mean, when he messaged me for more, I was like, all right, time to play this.
I need 3 days for this.
Yeah. Like, how do I get something out of it? At the time, I had a booker mate in Montreal and I was talking to the booker.
Yeah.
And I was like, yo, check out what's going on. Being this person who scammed me. And he's like, this is so funny because we're going back and forward with this person. And he's like, don't speak to me like this. Yeah. Wow. And I was like, how stupid does someone has to be to send through something that is looks like this? I wanted something more expensive. I have more money. I was just so rude. And
that's so funny, but that they were even still entertained. It.
Yeah, they were just so pissed off. I'm like,
well, because you got a quick 500 and whatever, like,
yeah.
And then I thought about it. I'm like, this person can easily get a gun and know where I'm performing, and they could shoot me. It's not like I can't afford security. So I was like,
but not giving him an easy 500 again.
Yeah, I was like, I don't want to die because of $550.
You didn't go to the police or anything.
I went.
And what'd they say?
I don't know if you've been to Montreal, but the police are mainly French. Francophones.
Okay.
So, and there's like this weird clash between English speakers and French speakers.
They sound like they're trying to pick you up all the time.
Yeah, it's like a race war there between them.
Yeah.
And I went to and I spoke in English, and the lady just looked at me funny, and then they're like, "We can't really help you. You got scammed." And I was like, "Okay." I just left.
Just walked it off.
Yeah, I didn't like the vibe. I didn't like the vibe the cops were giving me. I was like, "Should probably leave."
Just walk it off.
Okay. Do you guys have a joke that you could share with us?
I saved mine for the stage.
I have one. Okay. So when I was in Melbourne, there was this 7-Eleven Jamaican guy in the 7-Eleven. This is a true story. And he's always like, tell me a joke. Oh, you're a comedian. Tell me a joke. We're both Africans. Tell me a joke. And I'm like, nah, just come to the show, right?
Yeah.
Because it's one-on-one comedy is like the worst. So I was like, come to the show. And then one day I was focusing on writing jokes. And then I wrote this joke and I went, he'll appreciate this. So I found him and I said, hey, man, I was very confident. I got a joke for you. And he's like, hey, brother, tell me the joke. Tell me the joke. I was like, all right. And I said, how do you tell Africans apart? And he's like, gave me this weird look, like, how? And I said, okay. So I said, East Africans got a big forehead, right? Like we have, it's like a blessing because people with big forehead tend to be good looking. I'm not going to. You know,
FYI, my forehead is not big.
Yeah, well, exactly proves my point. It's supposed to be good looking, right? So I got a big forehead, East African. The good looking East African, I should say. Sorry, Emma. And then, so East Africans' big forehead looks like a mango head. And he goes, oh. And then I said, West Africans got wider nostrils, right? So that's how you can tell West Africans. And then I said, Nigerians are the easiest to tell out of all the Africans. And he goes, why? And I'm like, because they have your credit card details. And then he goes, get out of my shop. That's what I'm willing to share with you today.
That's great. How can people find you guys on social medias?
Very easy. My Instagram is emo_88. My Snapchat's the same as well. My website is emothecomedian.com.
Mm-hmm.
My Facebook is Emmanuel Majuk, Emmanuel, Majok. That's Facebook.
Yep. And Joe?
So my website, joewhitecomedian.com, and then there is a hyperlink to all my social medias on there. So that's the easiest way to find me. So if you just go on Google, put joewhitecomedian.com, mm-hmm. And then it'll shows where I'm performing would pop up, and yeah, you can just have fun. There's a lot of information on there. There's also one click away to my YouTube channel where there's videos on there.
Oh, fantastic. So, yeah. And NY Events has a few different comedies coming up. We've got a comedy at the Parkerville on the Friday the 25th of September and comedy at the Charles Wednesday 30th of September, and that can be found at www.nyevents.com.au/comedy. Thank you guys so much for coming in and sharing with me today and for the listeners.
Thank you for having us. It's been fun.
Anytime. Hey, I look forward to working with you guys next month, actually.
Most definitely.
I'm excited.
I'm very excited.
You're amazing. Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for listening into Bounce Back. My name's Yvonne Fletcher, and next week we're joined by another couple of comedians who are joining us for Coming to Perth. So
hey.
Take awesome. Care. Thanks, guys.
Peace.